I'm Faith Middleton. It's great to have you joining the party on the Food Schmooze here on WNPR in Connecticut, Rhode Island, Massachusetts, and New York, including the East End of Long Island. My food buddies are here. Christopher Brassberry of Metro Beast Restaurant in Simsbury, Connecticut, our senior contributor. Hey, Lori Mack, producer, Jonathan McNichol, producer. Hey, everybody.
Hey.
And as always, you can tell your friends no matter where they live, they can listen to the Food Schmooze from anywhere in the world. That's many people do at WNPR.org. Okay, before we get to the global flavors, cooking light and the calorie conscious lemony chicken salt in boca, let's talk grilled cheese. I think on an island, if you could, you know, you have one food, you know, that game we play. I think the grilled cheese might be my sandwich, you know, to live on.
Because it can be different every day.
Depending
it can have different cheese, different bread, different fillings.
That's on the right. Island? You can have all that stuff on the island?
Well, yes.
Okay, I see. All right.
It's my island.
It's a different kind of island.
That's fine. When you washed up a shipping container
of grilled cheese ingredients.
Grilled cheese.
And, there you go. Yes. And one Wilson volleyball.
Yes. Yeah. Don't forget Wilson.
And one fry pan.
No, Foreman grill.
Yeah, okay. on the and electricity.
And electricity. Yes, a power plant. Jonathan, are you writing this down?
Okay. Jason Sobozinski, who's owner of Casey's in New Haven, has been on our show, and you know he has a cheese truck that cruises New Haven or parks at the city's summer farmers market, and they make zillions of thick, toasty grilled cheese sandwiches. They are so good, it's ridiculous. So Jason was recently featured in Fine Cooking Magazine for his grilled cheese, but the one they decided to focus on, and I know this is right because this is amazing at his restaurant, is the grilled cheese with bacon and guacamole.
Oh, how could it not be?
And it's worth having it at the restaurant as opposed to the cheese truck because in the restaurant, he uses six different kinds of cheese. Six.
Yeah,
isn't that
evil.
Amazing? On sourdough bread. It's just amazing. Also, I was looking. New York Magazine decided to focus on artisanal cheeses, these very small batch cheese companies. And the Mystic Cheese Company in Connecticut was touted for its Melville cheese. I haven't had that yet.
No, I haven't either.
In New York Magazine, again, they also congratulated or singled out Cato Corner Farm cheese,
of
course.
Good.
Very good. No, has anybody tried cheese curds?
Yes.
Yes.
And do you like them? Have you had it in the traditional, you know, the recipe, which is from Montreal, it's Canadian poutine.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
So cheese curds, French fries, and gravy, essentially, is what this is. So I tried to look up, well, what are cheese curds? Because I realized I have no idea.
You got to be from Minnesota, and then they deep fry them at the fairs.
Oh, I could like that, too.
Oh, my God. It's worth going to the state fair just for the fried cheese
and
curds.
And in a little cone? Do they give you in a paper cone?
Oh, my God. It's just evil. Yeah. In a paper. Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
And do you put anything on it?
I don't. I just eat them.
So here's an interesting fact about these cheese curds. These are nuggets that form when whey is drawn off acidified coagulating milk.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
Can you say this?
Little Miss Muffin.
There you go.
Okay,
so pre-cheese.
But here's an interesting fact. At Footsteps Farm in Stonington, Connecticut, Craig Floyd, the farmer, made a deal with a local cheesemaker to take these cheese curds, you know, that would be tossed out, and he feeds them to his pigs.
That's for that.
So they're not only, you know, roaming wild in the forest on his farm that's been in his family for generations, but they are also feasting on this beautifully made, these beautifully made cheese curds. And I thought, plus no wonder the pork is so delicious there.
But oh my God, put gravy on it.
Takes it to a different level.
Right? Let's go to Montreal right now. That's the perfect food. It has to be.
What is the perfect
food? Poutine is the perfect food. Gravy, cheese curds. I don't know, but I can see how they came up with it. Just that soft, squishy cheese, the salty gravy, the French fries.
Okay. We want to say thanks to Coco Shack on Elm Street in Cheshire, Connecticut, for sending us the sweet and spicy honey roasted pecans to try. They are a very good Coco Shack. And we like the pecan brittle, too.
We sure did. It's gone.
I was going to say, I didn't see any of that.
That's usually the best indication.
Empty packaging everywhere, but not a scrap of food
left. When Jonathan finally gets around to saying, can I try it? And it's gone.
It's gone. Mm. You have to move fast in these offices.
That's right.
So here, I saw in Fine Cooking Magazine that they decided to test lemon juice in those little plastic lemons that you buy in the refrigerator section in the supermarket.
Yeah.
Is it even
that?
In the refrigerator section or is it on the shelf?
It's just on the shelf.
Which is kind of
it looks like a lemon amazing. With a little green top. Right.
Well, it's easy to tell the lemon juice from the lime juice. Yeah. Thank you, Jonathan, because the lime comes in a little
green.
Lime.
So what do they say?
So they were saying you always want to have fresh. It's always better. But it's good to have this stuff on hand. So that you've got backup. If you're in a storm, you know what happens. We talked about pantry cooking. So they said there actually is a Sicilia lemon juice for $1.99. It is from Italy. It's made with lemon juice, lemon oil, and sulfur dioxide as a preservative. They said it's a very good alternative. It's found in the produce section at the supermarket.
Ooh,
and the flavor is really close to the real deal, whereas... Right. You know, some of the others are a little off. They said this one was pretty close. So for $2, having that as a pantry item or maybe a refrigerator item is pretty good.
You're thinking food. I keep that around for cocktails.
Sicilia lemon juice.
Oh,
that's
no.
A good idea.
Right? Rose's lime juice.
Yeah, I keep that too. That's key. Oh,
that's it.
So good.
So you forget about real limes.
You know, I put Rose's lime juice in a recipe of mine.
And
it was good.
Used it in cooking.
Yeah, it was really fun.
Give that a try.
Okay.
I always keep a bottle for margarita season.
So speaking of our pantry show where we talked about a pantry and storm cooking using anything that you possibly could, we had a letter from Donna Rivera in Wallingford, Connecticut, and she says at the bottom, no email, just me-mail. So she says, Faith, love the show on storm and pantry food. We keep canned peaches and canned pineapples, etc., for those dry pork chops or chicken thighs that have been left in the freezer. You know, they're a little dry from age, or there's a storm, you've got to eat everything quickly. And she said, of course, the canned peaches and pineapple, good over any cake mix that you might have around.
Genius.
The trick is to keep plenty of eggs on hand for making treats or omelets. Check the date on the eggs. Sometimes they last almost a month. She said one of the things she does in her freezer is to freeze red peppers. She buys extra on sale, roasts them in the oven or on the grill, and also puts fresh basil in the fall in her food processor to make lots of pesto with oil, keeps that in the freezer too. She says, the most fun I have with flavors is recycling bunching onions. Those are the bulbs with the greens
still on them. With a little bit of the greens on them, yeah.
She said it's the cheap relative of chives. It costs very little that way and comes with these cute little roots. So she chops up the green uppers and then plants the white bulb outside or inside in a pot and keeps snipping.
Keeps sniffing. That's a great
Isn't
idea.
That the smartest thing? And the best tip.
That's a really good tip.
In the great tips department, Chris, you said something to me that was so interesting because we're going to talk about a recipe from our Global Kitchen book in just a couple of minutes. This is the amazing lemony chicken saltimbocca that is calorie conscious because it originally comes from Cooking Light magazine, their new cookbook that they have done. Oh, so delicious. And to thicken the sauce, there's no flour involved, just a little bit of cornstarch. And I asked you if cornstarch alters the flavor of sauces at all.
Yeah, and it doesn't. I have a friend who his name is Gene. He's a food scientist for Nestle's, and he uses the term below the flavor threshold. And that means if you put flour in something to thicken, like in a sauce, you can actually take a spoon, take that sauce, and you taste the flour. Whether you've cooked it in a roux, it has a different taste, or you use it raw, it has a taste or a flavor. Where cornstarch, when you mix it into thing, and this goes true with also arrowroot, which can be interchangeable with cornstarch. Those two are actually below the flavor threshold, so they don't change the taste of the sauce. When you
just the texture.
Just the texture.
Interesting.
Yeah. It's really cool. A lot of chefs now, I mean, we don't use flour to thicken much anymore in my restaurant at all. And I'm not the only chef. We use cornstarch for that reason, because sometimes we want a sauce to stand on its own flavor-wise, and we don't want to add anything else to it. But we like a little bit more viscosity, a little more thickness in the sauce so it coats.
Is there one better cornstarch than another, or are they all pretty much the
all
same?
All pretty much the same.
Okay. Yeah. So a lot of our gluten-free eaters resort to cornstarch to thicken things. There are other ways to do it, too, but this is so good to know.
And it's cheap. It's like 90 cents for a box, and it lasts forever.
That's true.
Yeah. That's a pantry item that everyone should keep, is cornstarch.
Do you keep yours in the refrigerator?
No.
And can it last for 10 years?
It probably can. Yeah. It totally. Is that how old yours is?
Doesn't it have a freshness date?
No, I don't think there's anything in it can go bad. It's just cornstarch.
I'm going to check, and I'll get back to you on that.
There's an expiration date on it. I don't think
I don't think we should be authorities on this until we know for sure.
Until we know for sure.
I agree with that.
Well, Lori still has her box from 10 years ago, and I think I might have used it.
Well, I didn't say that. I just realized when I had to look in the cabinet, and I thought, oh, my goodness.
You did what I did the last time I moved. I know you did. You boxed everything up.
Yes,
you didn't even look at the dates, and you put it right back in the new cabinets.
Three times, apparently, for three moves. Yes, I did.
Okay, just want to say, I looked it up, and cornstarch never goes bad. Just keep it dry, and it never expires.
Yay.
10 years is fine.
Thank you very much. I'm very happy.
Lori, now you don't have to throw it away, and you can move it to your next house in 10 years.
So
when our civilization goes,
yeah,
plastic bags and cornstarch.
Well, I just checked a sauce that was on our shelf here in our little kitchen, and it was 6 years old. And it was a hot sauce, and I was looking, I thought, you know, hot sauce really pretty much doesn't go bad. But then I spotted garlic, and I thought, this is a little chancy. I'm not taking a chance.
Yeah, probably better to throw it away. It's 6 years. Into the
trash. You know, things get shoved to the back of our refrigerator, and then I was looking for something to put on cottage cheese.
Surprise!
And there you go. So here we have, coming up, we have Cooking Light's Global Kitchen. All these delicious flavors and recipes from around the world made easy and also very calorie conscious. We just had, which is at our website right now, the lemony chicken saltimbocca that takes just 15 minutes. It is fabulous. It's at WNPR.org right now. Search programs for the Faith Middleton Food Schmooze. You'll see the link right there. I hope you will make a charitable contribution to feed the hungry, more mouthwatering conversation and fun here on the Food Schmooze. We'll be right back.
Knock cornbread out of sight. Beans. Cornbread said, now that's all right. Beans. Meet me on the corner tomorrow night. I'll be ready. I'll be ready tomorrow night. I'll be ready tomorrow night. That's what Beans said to cornbread.
I'm Faith Middleton. The Food Schmooze Party here on WNPR is heard Wednesdays at 3 and 9 p.m. and Saturdays at noon. Join the conversation with us on Facebook. Simply search The Faith Middleton Show. Thanks to our talented crew, senior contributor Chris Prosperi of Metro Beast Restaurant in Simsbury, Connecticut, Eugene Amatruda, Marion Roy, senior producer Lori Mack, producer Jonathan McNichol, and WNPR's content director is Jim Cutie. We thank you first and foremost for listening. I can't wait to get to this part because we just ate this dish and it is fantastic. It's on our website right now. It comes from Cooking Light's Global Kitchen, and David Joachim, who's done I don't know how many cookbooks, is the author of this particular book for them. So this is, because it's from Cooking Light, it is calorie conscious. It is so delicious. I can't even tell you. And it takes 15 minutes to prepare.
Yeah,
the biggest job here is going to the supermarket to get a few ingredients. You know,
and
so
that is a job.
Yes, that's true.
Okay, so this lemony chicken, by the way, saltimbocca, in case anybody's wondering, in Italian translates into jump in the mouth.
I never knew that.
Isn't that
all
great?
Those years of making it and knowing the recipe, I never knew that's what
it's
it meant.
Great. I just love that. Now, in a restaurant, this would be, there's probably be flour in it and there'd be a marsala butter sauce, but this has been lightened up and you do not miss a thing.
Not at all.
The lemon is just
perfect. What we're talking about. We're talking about chicken cutlets that are wrapped in slices of prosciutto, and you don't have to get the expensive kind, just straight from the supermarket. There's just 4 teaspoons of extra virgin olive oil in this recipe, and it serves 4 people, so each person only is getting a teaspoonful of olive oil when you divide this up. There is fat-free, low-sodium chicken broth, lemon juice, just a tiny bit of cornstarch to give it a little bit of thickness, and then lemon wedges, and we served it over some beautiful spinach. So Chris, this is one of the best things that we've had in a long time, I think, and I just love it that it's calorie conscious and so easy.
I just keep thinking, I keep looking at the recipe saying there had to be more in that when I made it last night, because it just tasted and felt so satisfying.
It really did.
Right? I mean, you would think there's a lot more going on than the little bit of ingredients that are in here.
I agree. But I don't miss a thing.
No.
I don't miss the marsala.
Butter.
I don't miss butter at all.
No.
So here we go. You're going to the supermarket. You just have to throw some chicken cutlets into your basket.
Yeah.
Stop by the produce section and get some sage leaves.
Yeah. Little
package. Because you do want to use fresh for this.
Yes.
And you've probably got olive oil in the house. You might have chicken broth in the house. You've probably got a lemon. And you probably have cornstarch on the shelf. So you're good to go.
If
not, just get those things and you can use them over and over again. All right. So start us out, Chris. How does this go?
So you take the chicken and just sprinkle a little salt on the chicken breast. Then you take sage leaves. It suggests about 3 sage leaves on each cutlet, and you lay it on top. And then you take the prosciutto slices. And I suggest, like you said, buy the stuff that's already sliced in the package so it's easy to use. And you just take a piece out, lay it on the cutting board, and then you take the chicken and you wrap it in it.
You just basically fold it over.
Fold it over and securing that sage leaf underneath the prosciutto, right? So it's like a little package almost, right?
Right. And then this is stovetop. I forgot to say that.
Yeah.
So you just heat a large skillet on medium.
Yeah.
You add a tablespoon of oil to the pan.
Mm-hmm.
Swirl it around so that it coats.
Yeah.
You put the chicken in the pan. It's wrapped in the prosciutto. And how many minutes on each side,
Chris? 2 minutes on each side. It was really, again, 4 ounces.
Because cutlets are thin.
Yeah, 4 ounce cutlets. They're very small cutlets. So again, not a lot of chicken. They're very thin. So they cook very quickly. And the prosciutto makes it kind of non-stick, so they don't stick either.
Mm. And the prosciutto in the oil, bit of oil,
crispy.
Gets caramelized, and so it's a little crispy.
Oh.
And then you just combine to make the sauce. How easy is it?
Take the chicken out of the pan. Just keep it on the side on a little plate or something to keep it warm. You take a little bowl. You combine the broth, the lemon juice, and the cornstarch in a bowl. Stir it with a whisk until it's this smooth mixture, right? Then you drizzle in the leftover one teaspoon of oil that goes in the sauce. Olive oil instead of the butter, right? And then you drop that in the pan, bring it to a boil, and it thickens right there.
And just stir it in the pan, and it does. And then you just spoon it over your chicken that's crispy now from the prosciutto. Mm. You serve it with some lemon wedges if you like.
Oh, yeah, and
off
I
it
love
goes.
The lemon on
Me
it.
Me too.
A little extra.
200 calories for that.
How is that possible?
Oh.
Is that for one piece of chicken?
That's for one piece
serving.
Of chicken.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Could you use a lemon olive oil in
this
instead of regular?
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. Especially if you love the lemon flavor, it would add even more lemon.
You really could just play if you wanted to. If you had a garlic olive oil,
oh my gosh.
You know,
there's so many basil instead of sage.
Yeah.
I mean, there's so many. There's 100 things you could do here different that you'd sort of make it your own. Or
so let me tell you that this recipe that we love. I am crazy about this recipe, and especially because of how easy it is, how calorie conscious it is. Everybody's thinking about bathing suit weather. This is lemony chicken salt in boca. Salt in boca means jump in the mouth. And it is at our website right now. It takes 15 minutes in a pan on the stovetop. So go to WNPR.org, search programs for the Faith Middleton Food Schmooze. You'll see the link. The recipe is right there for you. I'm so happy putting this in. And we're going to be talking to the author who's given us this recipe from Cooking Light, their new cookbook, in just a few minutes.
Yeah, there's got to be more in there, too. I was just thinking the leftovers. Oh, we were talking grilled cheese. If you had leftover of this, you could just chop it up, the chicken, then the prosciutto and the sage, and put that on a grilled cheese. Oh, my God.
That would be good if you had leftovers.
Lori's like, there'd be no leftovers.
So that's a good idea because I would make twice as much.
Oh, yeah.
And I, the next day, I would chop it up, as you say, Chris, that's a brilliant idea, and I would sprinkle it on top of salad greens for lunch at work.
Or in a pasta. Yeah. It's funny because I'm teaching my foster kid right now cooking things, and what she finds, because she's busy now with an internship and going to school and all that, she doesn't want to cook all the time. So I'm telling her stuff like exactly like what you said. Make that recipe if you liked it. Make double, and then put the rest away, and then you'll just come up with ways of using it.
Well, I like this so much, I would have this again the next night as my dinner, not just for lunch, with the salad greens
or the pasta. Three times the recipe, and then you'll eventually use it in something else.
I don't know. This is going to be one of my go-to recipes. I have to say that.
A great recipe for having people over, it's fancy enough to look like you've worked really hard. But it's easy enough to do on a Tuesday night when you just get home and you don't know what to eat because you can have all these ingredients in your fridge.
Now, I'm a fan of fresh cilantro. I put it on everything. Everything.
Yes,
it's how I dress up one of my frozen food dinners that I have to have. So, you know, on a crazy, crazy night when I'm doing work till 10, 11 o'clock at night, that's what goes in the microwave, and I doctor them. And so I'm always putting in chopped fresh prosciutto and fresh lemon juice. Oh. And, you know, on Tuesday nights, especially when I'm preparing for the food schmooze week. So I wonder about this recipe with, instead of the sage leaves on the inside, which are fantastic, could we put some chopped cilantro in there?
Totally. And I would take it even one step further. I would do that, and then I would make a fresh salsa or use whatever my favorite jarred salsa and put that on top and forget the sauce.
So I would then, on top of that, I would use lime juice instead of lemon juice because with prosciutto, lime is so gorgeous. Okay, see how you
now you're going to have to call it something else because it's now not salt and boca.
Yes, it is because salt and boca means what?
Salt and boca means jump in the mouth.
Jump in the mouth, and that jumps in my mouth.
Okay.
Because I'm with Faith.
I can pretty much call everything that then.
Okay.
Lori's having chocolate salt and buca right now.
Hey, I just saw a recipe for a chocolate baklava or baklava, depending on your persuasion. And so you're just using the pastry from the supermarket, the puff pastry, and layers of the nuts, the honey, and chocolate, melted chocolate, dark chocolate. I thought, what a good idea, walnuts. Okay, here's what we're going to do. We're going to get on the line David Joachim, who is a New York Times best-selling author. He has done lots and lots of cookbooks, including this new one, Cooking Light Global Kitchen, the world's most delicious food made easy. And as you can hear from our last recipe, it is. And we tested that one. David Joachim, by the way, has been editor or author of 40 cookbooks.
Wow.
Including my favorite, A Man, A Can, and A Plan.
Best
book ever.
You know, that cookbook sold 500,000 copies. That was very popular.
It's crazy.
And there was a sequel, you know, another one.
Oh, my gosh. It's the best book ever for a guy.
David Joachim, welcome to the Food Schmooze.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's so great to have you here, although I don't know how you have any time.
Always time to talk about food.
I know, me too. Well, you know what we do, talking about meals we've had and are going to have while we're eating this one. So I love the way you did this cookbook. We just made and ate the lemony chicken saltimbocca, and we have that on our website at WNPR.org right now. And you just click on programs for the Faith Middleton Food Schmooze, and you'll see the recipe and information about this cookbook. That was so delicious and so crazy easy. 15 minutes, you were right.
Oh, that one is really simple. That's one of the great things about that. And a lot of the recipes in the book, they use ingredients that are right under our noses in the supermarket to create great flavors. It's amazing how much is in our supermarkets these days, especially in the produce aisle. But this dish, if you're familiar with classic saltimbocca, fresh sage and prosciutto are the key flavors there. And veal is typically the meat, so it's a cutlet of veal, and it is pounded or rolled up with the prosciutto and sage, and then typically there's a marsala butter sauce. So in this recipe, We do a little lighter take on the sauce with stock and lemon juice and thicken it up with just a little cornstarch.
We loved it. I'm going to make this one of my go-to recipes at home. So thank you so much for that.
Yeah, 15 minutes. I mean, you can't beat that for a really satisfying entree on a weeknight.
Yeah, or a weekend. You know, if you don't want to struggle, why do we struggle so much with these super complicated recipes? Let's go to tuna steaks. This is clever of you to use ginger preserves that you will find in any supermarket and soy sauce and a little bit of wasabi. And that's the sauce, this wasabi ginger glaze that goes on top of these tuna steaks.
Yes. So this recipe, I would say, is one of the more creative recipes in the book. A lot of them are really authentic versions of dishes you would find in the country of its origin. So if you're in Southeast Asia, we have a really classic pad Thai, for instance. But with a few recipes throughout the book, we take some liberties, and this is one of them. Ginger, wasabi, soy, these are the flavors that you would expect in a Japanese dish, but we're getting the ginger from ginger marmalade. Why not? Because sugar is often added, or honey is added for sweetness. Why not get the sweetness and the ginger in one ingredient?
And so, the sugar with the tartness of the soy, that's a wonderful combination.
Yes, and the spiciness of the wasabi. So basically you mix that all together, soy sauce, ginger marmalade, and wasabi paste in a bowl, and that becomes your glaze. And this is another really quick dish. This is tuna steaks that you just let soak in a little soy sauce for 5 minutes while you mix up the glaze. And then you pan-sear the fish, spoon on that glaze of soy, ginger marmalade, and wasabi, and then just let it coat the surface and create that nice sheen on the top, and serve it with a little cilantro and some rice. It's very simple, but that's awesome flavor.
This is why he is my hero. This is just a kicked-up version of a man can or plan recipe, right? That's why, right there.
It is right
that's
there.
Just a fancy way of doing it.
Five ingredients. I think that's it.
One of my favorite dishes, when the book came in, I immediately went to see if you had done this. I was so happy. Adobo chicken. And this is big in Mexico and in Spain. It's a seasoning. But in the Philippines, this is an old way, right, of stewing meat with vinegar. And so you've done your version of adobo chicken.
Yeah, so adobo has a few different meanings. In Mexico and Spain, it's more like a seasoning. But adobo in the Philippines actually refers to a method. It still has that spark of flavor that you expect from adobo, but in this case, it comes from stewing, usually chicken, in vinegar. And vinegar is one of the key flavors of Filipino food. And if you can use coconut vinegar, that's the best, but just white distilled vinegar is fine. Vinegar and black pepper are key flavors in Filipino cuisine. So this is pretty simple. This is a dish that you let stew for a while, not a lot of hands-on time. You basically brown some bone-in chicken thighs, saute a little onion and garlic, and then you add the brown chicken back to the pan along with some soy sauce, the white vinegar, some honey, black pepper, and a bay leaf. And you just let that stew together till the chicken is nice and tender. You can feel the joints moving easily in the thighs. That's really it.
Yeah, with rice.
Wow.
You're all set. Wonderful sauce.
Yeah, a little rice on the side, maybe some calamondin, the calamansi, which are the tangerines that are native to the Philippines. Those would be great alongside.
Not at Stop and Shop, but that's okay. I can tell.
Or a tangerine. You could use a navel orange, too.
See, this
just
is
a little orange flavor.
This is how folks in San Francisco and New York talk. And yes, and be sure and get your clementines from a small region. I loved that you included this drink, which is a gingered pineapple juice. How do you say this word?
Namakuji.
Namakuji. It takes about 18 minutes to make this thing. Pineapples, fresh ginger, peeled fresh lemongrass. You can actually get that in the supermarket. Water, powdered sugar, and some mint leaves, all available to us. So this is essentially stewing these things together, correct?
Yes, it is. And the cool thing here is that you're actually using the pineapple rind. So let's say you have fresh pineapple over the summer and you're making a salad or something else with the pineapple. Maybe you're grilling it. I love grilling pineapple.
Me too.
What do you do with the rinds? You know, why not use them for something? They've got a little bit of that flesh. They've got the flavor. So this is a thrifty way to use the rinds. It's very classic in the Ivory Coast in Western Africa. And you simmer the rinds in a little water, and then strain out the rinds. While that's simmering, you puree some ginger and lemongrass, or you could use lemon zest, but lemongrass is better. It's got a different lemon flavor, let's put it that way. You squeeze out the juices from the puree of ginger and lemongrass, and you mix that with the steeped pineapple juice that you have. And then you mix in a little bit of sugar and some more water and chill it.
And top it off with a little splash of rum.
Of rum, exactly. How did I know you were going to go there?
Oh.
In which case, would you need the sugar if you're adding rum?
I would lower the sugar if you're adding some rum. Yeah, adjust the sugar as you need to if you're making a cocktail.
And I would have that cocktail just before eating the next dish we're going to talk about, which is fish in a coconut curry. So think halibut in a coconut curry. So easy to do because we're all using a pre-mixed curry powder. So David Joachim, stay right where you are. We're going to keep talking about more of your recipes. The Faith Middleton Food Schmooze Connecticut Martini Competition in June has big news. We're going to hold it in Simsbury this time and televise it on CPTV. So bartenders, start testing your creations. To get ourselves in the spirit, I'll be judging the finals of the Plan B Burger Group's Iron Bar Competition, requiring all contestants to use bourbon in their cocktails. Chris Prosperi will also judge, and the president of Will It Bourbon will join the judges panel. There's prize money and a trip to Kentucky to sample bourbon. Come see Chris and me judge the night of Wednesday, March 26th at Plan B Burger Bar in Milford, Connecticut for the finals. And for information, go online to planbburger.com. The fun begins. Please support your local food growers and food makers. Find the food, wine, recipes, and cocktails we feature anytime online at WNPR.org. Click on Programs for the Faith Middleton Show Food Schmooze. More delicious conversation after this quick break. Please stay with us. I'm Faith Middleton with the gang, and this is the Food Schmooze Party coming to you in Connecticut, Rhode Island, Massachusetts, and New York, including the East End of Long Island. You can tweet us at FaithWNPR, and to join the conversation with us on Facebook, search The Faith Middleton Show. We are talking with David Joachim, and he is author or consultant on 40 cookbooks, so he's a very busy guy. He's done one of our favorites, A Man, A Can, and A Plan.
The best book on earth.
And I know, Chris, it is your ultimate favorite. He's also done this new one in collaboration with Cooking Light magazine, Global Kitchen. So this is using flavors from around the world, but, you know, so accessible. You can get almost all of these in your traditional supermarket. And the whole idea with this, you perhaps do not have the book yet. And as you listen, we're trying to give you ideas of things that you can mix together. So even if you don't have the book and can't run and do this right now, you can see information about the book at our website with one of our favorite recipes from the book that we just ate. And it's now going to be one of my go-to dishes. It's so delicious. And that is lemony chicken saltimbocca. It's calorie conscious. It takes only 15 minutes and you do it in a stovetop pan. There's no flour. There's no marsala in it. You use chicken instead of veal. It is a killer delicious thing. So, David, let's talk about fish in coconut curry. Normally, any kind of curry sauce in a book that's talking about global flavors is so complicated that it takes you 2 weekends to complete the recipe. And yours is so much easier. So tell us about this.
Yeah, so this is a dish from Africa. And it originated in Zanzibar, but the area of Tanzania is really in the crossroads of the spice routes, the trade routes from India. So the dish incorporates a lot of curry spices that you would associate with Indian cooking. And African cooks would, just like Indian cooks, mash up these spices, mash up, say, coriander, cumin, cinnamon, various spices would be ground. So today in America, we often use ground spices, and there is a little bit of a shortcut there. You lose some flavor. Whenever you cut any ingredient, some of the flavor disappears to the air. But this saves so much time. So basically, we're using a store-bought curry powder, and I like the Madras curry powder. It's a little spicier, and the spice combination is a little better.
Yeah, me too. I like that one.
I'm so glad you love this one, because this is one of my favorites in the book. I developed a bunch of recipes to make sure that every continent on the globe had a fair representation of their classic preparations. And this is just seasoned white fish. I use halibut. You could use snapper, almost any other white fish. You season it with a little curry powder and salt and pepper, pan-sear the fish, and then sort of like the other recipes I've been talking about, very basic preparation with any protein that you use, you take the browned protein out of the pan, and then you sauté some aromatics. So this one has onion, red bell pepper, garlic, ginger, and fresh tomatoes. And there's also some lemon juice in there for spark. You simmer that all down until the tomatoes start to break down. And then you add some coconut milk, and this is the coconut curry part of it. This enriches the whole flavor base you've created in the pan. It gives it a slightly thicker texture.
And you use light coconut milk.
Yes. This just cuts down the calories a little bit, but you could use whatever coconut milk you have on hand. You add the fish back to the pan, and then you just let the fish cook through.
This is 265 calories.
It's heaven.
Isn't that amazing?
Wow,
so fish and coconut curry, I love that. Okay, we talked about the lemony chicken salt himboka, and we're going to go now to something desserty. A lot of people cannot have flour, and I'm thinking about our gluten-sensitive or gluten-free eaters. And here are flourless almond cookies. These are Spanish.
Correct, yeah, these are from Spain. So not a lot of wheat is grown on the coast of Spain. Nuts grow better there, frankly. So instead of using wheat flour for baked goods, Spanish cooks there often use almond flour. And this is a gluten-free recipe, like you said. It's a cookie, and this is so simple. Another five-ingredient recipe. You can buy almond flour, or you can just take whole blanched almonds, the kind without the skins on them, and buzz them in your food processor. And then you just buzz in some sugar, a little lemon zest, an egg, and some salt. Very simple cookie dough. Form it into balls between your palms, and then sprinkle on a little cinnamon, and then you press a whole almond right into the top to flatten the ball out a little bit. Bake them, and you've got a great snack for
afternoon
coffee.
Is that great?
Faith is smiling ear to ear right now.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I love
this. Breakfast with coffee in the morning.
Yeah. Until you get to this one, because this would be breakfast for me, because I'm a cornbread nut. This is a Paraguayan cornbread. It takes about 30 minutes to make this. And what is so intriguing to me about this is that there are cheeses in here. There are corn. There's egg whites to give it some lift. There's no flour. So gluten-free folks, this is a great cornbread recipe, because some of the cornbread recipes for gluten-free eaters online, I've eaten them, and they're not so great. This is good.
Yeah, this is a pretty traditional preparation. There isn't anything in here to make it gluten-free. What's holding it together is some pureed fresh corn and the cheese, like you mentioned, and some cornmeal. So there is no wheat flour in this. And it's a cool recipe because it is familiar to people because they know cornbread, classic southern skillet cornbread. This is also made in a skillet or a cake pan. What differs is that it's creamy inside. You've got the cheese, you've got pureed fresh corn. Yes. That's creating this really soft, creamy texture inside, but it's still got the crisp surface of cornbread that's baked in, say, a cast iron skillet.
Let me say that there's onion in here. There's chopped green bell pepper. There's a little bit of low-fat cottage cheese. There's shredded Munster cheese, fat-free milk, salt and pepper, the egg whites, and the cream of tartar.
Right, so you might be thinking, what is cottage cheese or Munster cheese doing in Paraguayan cuisine? But these are actually very similar to products that you would get in that country. Farmer's cheese, very similar to cottage cheese. You could use any fresh farmer's cheese. Munster cheese, you could use queso fresco or any mild cheese like Monterey Jack. These are the cheeses that we've used here. But it's interesting, you called up the savory ingredients, so the onion and bell pepper. The name Sopa Paraguaya means soup and bread. So you've got these soup-based ingredients, onion, sautéed in oil. And it's kind of like a soup, and it is creamier and softer than your typical cornbread. So it's, you can think of it as soupier, but that's where the name comes from. Very simple to put together.
Well, I want to
but
make
it
this.
Holds together.
Okay. It holds together. You saute the aromatics, the onion, and the green, it's green bell pepper. You could use red. And then you puree fresh kernels of corn. You could actually use thawed frozen corn if you like. And you puree that with the farmer's cheese, the queso fresco, or cottage cheese, which is what we call for in the book. Then you mix in cornmeal, some whole corn kernels, and the mild Monterey Jack or Munster, and some milk. And what we do to get a little lift is whip some egg whites. Instead of using whole eggs, we just whip the whites and fold those into this mixture, and they'll puff up in the oven. The bubbles that you create when you whip the whites will expand and just give the bread a little lift and create a lighter texture.
And it bakes for about 30 minutes, and out comes that skillet, and how great is that? And you could obviously freeze this, right?
You could. Yes, yeah. I mean, this isn't going to stick around for long, though. Like, whenever I have cornbread in my house, I need to make two pans because the first one's gone in minutes.
Well, I am suggesting freezing it because I often crave cornbread but don't want to go through or don't have the time to go through the whole process on a weeknight of making it. This is a much simpler way to do it, but I think why not make a couple batches and put some in the freezer?
You could absolutely do that. I do that with lots of breads. Take them out and actually slice them before you freeze them. Then you can just take out a slice or two, and I pop it in a small oven.
And on a previous Food Schmooze, one of our favorite recipes was a cornbread that is grilled. And so I can see doing this with your cornbread, which is after it's made, putting a little butter on the top and sticking it under the grill so that it caramelizes on the top.
You're speaking my language.
Oh, okay. I knew I loved you. See?
That sounds great.
Yep. Or we could put it in Chris's Foreman grill.
Yeah.
That's another way thing
Keep
to
that
do.
That on the counter at all times.
We're talking with David Joachim. He is author of Cooking Light Global Kitchen. These are calorie-conscious recipes using global flavors, I would say 99% of which are available in your supermarket. These are easy, lightened up, and so, so good. Yuca, I see in the supermarket all the time, David, and I never know what to make of it, what to do with it. And I know around the world this is such an important thing for people. And here's a recipe for yuca coconut cake. Where is this from? Is this Spanish?
This is Colombian.
Colombian, okay.
If you translate to Spanish, the name is enyucado, and it means yucified. So it's a cake that has been yucified. And the yuca is there. It's a starchy root. If you've seen this sort of brown skin, it looks kind of like a sweet potato, but it's much harder on the inside. Yuca is a great staple food of South America. And here it is the starch that's holding together this sweet and savory cake. Another interesting thing about South American food, they often mix sweet and savory together. And this is one of the dishes that does that.
So you get yuca in the supermarket, which is cassava. By the way, cassava is a gluten-free flour. Flour is made from cassava. So we have this gluten-free item. This is another, for people who are gluten-free or gluten-sensitive, this is a great cake for you because there's no flour in here. So a fresh yuca, it's grated, and then you could use reduced-fat Monterey Jack cheese, so a little bit of spiciness there, some grated fresh coconut. You could buy it in a package, sugar, coconut milk, which is light, 1 tablespoon of butter only, a little aniseed, vanilla extract, a little salt, and this is skillet again, right?
Yes, a cast iron skillet. So this is similar to the cornbread, actually. You want to get a nice crisp crust, but you actually want that crispness on both sides, on the bottom and the top. So this bakes for a long time. This bakes for 2 hours. So it doesn't take long to put together. You mix it up, put it in the pan, and then just let it sit in the oven for 2 hours. But you get a nice creamy inside from the yuca, which is sort of starchy, and the coconut milk. That creates this sort of soft, creamy interior, and the crisp surface, like the shards of coconut and yuca crisp up on the surface. So you've got this great contrast of creamy and crispy, and also the sweet and savory contrast makes this really delicious and adaptable, something you could serve with a soup, or you could have it as a snack in the afternoon. You could even serve it as dessert.
And I thought to myself, all right, well, this is one where the calories are going to kill me. And 280 calories a slice.
How is that possible?
I know. That's great. Isn't that amazing? Because it's basically a vegetable-based cake. And even though there's light coconut milk in it, there's the tiniest amount of butter. Yeah.
And if you're not familiar with yuca, don't be scared off. If you know what tapioca is, tapioca is made from yuca.
Yeah.
That is the same thing. So it's just a starch. Tapioca is, the starch is, it's rolled into these balls that we use to thicken puddings, but it has the same effect in this cake. So this is just the pure vegetable. To prepare it, all you do is peel it like a potato and then grate it. There are some fibrous, woody strings in the center of yuca, and as you grate it, you just remove those and discard them. But the rest of it is this pure, it's almost like pure starch. It's very mild in flavor, but the rest of the ingredients here, the cheese, the fresh grated coconut, the coconut milk, sugar, and especially the anise and vanilla are creating great aroma and flavor in this cake.
David, you have really done something with this, and you are great to talk with about food. So we're going to keep going. This is David Joachim, J-O-A-C-H-I-M, although you can see his cookbook and one of our favorite recipes we just made and ate here on the show. The book is Cooking Like Global Kitchen. We made the easy lemony chicken saltimbocca, which was amazingly delicious. And so that recipe's at our site right now, along with information about the book, and that's WNPR.org. Search programs for the Faith Middleton Food Schmooze. Let's squeeze in one more. And again, as you're listening, we're hoping that you get ideas about cooking, because you probably don't yet have this. This is new in your hands yet. But the whole idea is to get ideas about flavors and combinations that can go together. So this is chicken larb, L-A-R-B. This takes about a half an hour. You buy some red curry paste, and you've got the skinless, boneless chicken breasts and a little bit of oil and cucumber and shallots and fresh cilantro and lime juice. Oh, and cabbage leaves. So tell us how this works.
This is super simple. The prepared curry paste is what makes it so easy. So if you bought this or made this or got this in Laos or Thailand, the curry paste would be made with fresh, mashed and pureed shallots and chilies and galangal or ginger. Red curry paste is essentially what you end up with. So we're using that as the flavor base here. And this could not be simpler. You just put curry paste, whole chicken breasts, the boneless chicken breasts, and a little bit of salt in the food processor, and you buzz that just until the chicken is chopped and the curry paste gets mixed into it. And then you just brown the chicken in a pan. That is really it. The basis of this is a chopped meat salad that is spiced up with fresh vegetables. So you take that brown chicken and you put it on a lettuce leaf or some cabbage leaves and then sprinkle on whatever you like. And that, for me, means some bright juiciness with cucumber, maybe some fresh cilantro, some lime juice for spark. But you could put on a chili paste, like a sriracha or another type hot sauce. And then you roll that up. This is a great lunch because it comes together real quick. It's very fresh. It's very light. And it's full of flavor.
Yeah, I'm thinking, oh, I want to put this in a spring roll wrapper.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, exactly.
What fun. Chicken larb. Oh, that's a good one.
Now, you could use any other meat you like. You could use pork if that's what you have on hand. You could use duck. But chicken is so popular, and people often have that around. So this is a great thing to have in your back pocket if you want to whip together a quick dish with some bright flavors.
David, thank you so much for being on the Food Schmooze. You are the best guest. You have done the most magnificent job with this cookbook. We want to make every single thing in addition to what we've already made, so thank you.
I hope you do. Well, thanks for having me.
All right, you're welcome. Cooking Light Global Kitchen. The author is David Joachim, spelled J-O-A-C-H-I-M. You can find this book and the lemony, easy lemony chicken saltimbocca that is all made on the stovetop in 15 minutes. That's all at our website right now, WNPR.org. Search programs for the Faith Middleton Food Schmooze. And by the way, once you get to our Food Schmooze site, just cruise through the pages of the Faith Middleton Show, and you will see all kinds of recipes, cocktails, value wines, you name it, and it's up there. Because if you're hungry or you're just dying for something to satisfy your soul, that's what we're trying to do. If you're looking for something to cook on a weeknight, that's what we're trying to do. WNPR.org. Click on Programs for the Faith Middleton Food Schmooze. Here's to pleasure, my friends, and remember, never eat more than you can lift. In New Haven, I'm Faith Middleton.
Everybody eats when they come to mind.